Welcome to the Local Shop Podcast. I'm Chris Noyce, and today I'm joined by our Chief Executive Ed Woodall and Public Affairs Lead Jordan Newfield to unpack the results of last week's elections. On Thursday, as you well know, local elections were held across the country, the results of which will have long-term ramifications when it comes to the UK government. We're going to talk a little bit about that, but what we're going into detail on today is a closer look on the Scottish and Welsh elections and what we can expect in terms of new policy relevant to local shops in the coming months from Senedd and Holyrood. So, Jordan, just give us a bird's eye view, a rundown of what's happened and who are the big winners from last week.
Sure. So everyone's been talking about the breakaway of that two-party system that we've had for quite a while. And we've seen that in all three elections, in the English council elections, but also in Scotland and Wales. Labour and Conservative has suffered huge losses with Greens and Lib Dems and Reform all gaining ground. In Wales in particular, Plaid Cymru won with they're now the largest party for the first time since devolution began in Wales in 1999. And they're just 6 seats short of a majority, with Reform coming second there. In Scotland, similarly, the SNP, the other nationalist party over there, won for the fifth time in a row. And now they are 7 seats short of a majority, with Labour and Reform coming joint second.
Okay, so potential seismic change there. Ed, you've been through quite a few election cycles in your time at ACS. How much of a change is this, particularly in Wales, as a kind of blowing up of the whole system, right?
Yeah, it's a really big change in Wales, really big change for Labour. Labour have been in power in Wales for a very long period of time. They've always been the dominant party, and now there's a huge change to Plaid Cymru, and that's going to take a lot of getting used to. I think things that haven't changed, obviously they've got to cooperate with other parties still. They haven't got a full majority, so that's going to affect the sort of dynamic around policy development and how we interact, not just with them, but other parties in the Senedd as we go forward. But, you know, it really is a big moment of change for Wales, and it's a big moment of change for Plaid Cymru because they've got to step up into this leading party role and show how they're going to take the country forward. And that's not just for their party, but also businesses and various communities across Wales as well.
Yeah, absolutely right. And Jordan, you mentioned, and Ed, you mentioned as well, we're looking, I guess, in a way for both Scotland and Wales, two very similar situations now where you've got national parties looking to form minority governments. Jordan, how's this going to work in practice? And in terms of being able to influence those decisions and lobbying into those governments, how much more difficult does it make to get anything through? Or is it an opportunity potentially when you're talking to multiple parties as part of this?
Sure. Well, it's important to know that neither Plaid nor the SNP have indicated that they're willing to go into coalition with any other parties. Okay. Plaid have said they're willing to work with any party on any issue, which is going to be quite important. I think they'll probably pick and choose depending on the subject matter, but it won't be easy. I mean, the other parties will be looking to kind of negotiate on different issues, and they might not be happy with the way the government had gone in a certain direction on another issue before, so that would be really difficult for them. The SNP have indicated that they're also willing to work with other parties, but they have ruled out entirely working with Reform on any issue, which is going to be quite important when it comes down to policymaking.
And I mean, that in itself is significant, given the gains that Reform made in the local elections, given the gains that they've made in Wales in particular. Is that going to hold? I mean, it feels like if you're probably looking for kind of any coalition you can get to, right?
Sure, yeah, I think it'll be a real challenge for them. And there's no doubt that Reform are becoming increasingly popular. And as we get close to election, Reform will probably increase their support in Scotland. Yeah, I think it's going to be a real challenge for John Swinney and his team to try and start them off.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, right. Let's get into some of the specifics then. Let's talk about Wales first, because before the election, we set out where the main party stood on all the key issues affecting our sector. And now that the dust is beginning to settle, I think it's really important that we look at some of the specifics and hold these parties to account for the things that they have said in their manifestos. And first of all, when we look at Wales, the clock on the introduction of the deposit return scheme is ticking. Rules are due to come into force in October 2027. If you're counting, that is less than 18 months away now. And as of right now, in Wales, there is no organisation appointed to run the scheme. Plaid have said they still want to look at a scheme that includes glass at some point down the line. Ed, do you think where we are now, is there any potential for a more aligned scheme, given that we've heard that Plaid will be talking to other parties? Other parties have indicated that they want alignment across the UK for DRS. What kind of things could we be looking at in terms of potential concessions as we count down in the next 18 months to DRS coming in?
Well, look, that October 2027 date that you mentioned is the key date that they've got to work towards. And with things setting up something as complicated as DRS, they are going to have to move quickly to work with others if they want that to happen on that deadline. So I think they will be prioritising this, and they will be looking to make concessions around alignment with the rest of the UK. And we think there's always been space for the requirements around glass and recycling of glass to be a future part of the scheme, mm-hmm. but not for it to go live in October 2027. So actually what we're looking for them to do is to move really quickly around their regulations and working with other parties to change those regulations so that we can get to the point where we're implementing as one across the UK, because that works for our supply chains, for stores, and gives certainty for customers in the long run, because it's still going to be really complicated to implement. So I expect them to be looking at this very quickly, and we'll certainly be pushing them to.
Yeah, and you know, we've been working for over a decade on trying to align schemes as much as possible. We've talked previously about the Scottish scheme that didn't quite get up and running, and then naturally aligning with England and Northern Ireland. So, you know, I think from us, from our point of view, very consistent and aligned scheme is certainly the way forward for retailers, and we'll be making that point as we go on. The next thing that stands out is this always happens in every manifesto, is a commitment in the Plaid manifesto to rebalance and reform the business rate system. Jordan, this is something you've been working on in your time at ACS and beforehand. It comes up time and time again. How likely is it that we're going to see meaningful reform in the duration of the next parliament, or even wider, in our lifetimes?
Sure, yeah, I wouldn't hold your breath on it. I mean, as you said before, parties in opposition always talk about reforming and replacing the business rate system. We had Labour spoke about it quite a lot in the run-up to the general election. The Conservatives are now talking about reforming business rates and wholesale reform. We often end up with a very similar property-based tax system, which always looks like business rates, always just tinkering around the edges of the business rate system. For us, I think it's quite important to, I mean, there's always going to be winners and losers in the business rate system. And I think for us, it's about ensuring that the system encourages investment in high streets and investment in services, and also just in general supports the high streets. So kind of rebalance the books in favour of high street businesses compared to others.
Yep. No, I think that's right. And when others have looked at complete change, often that's not necessarily beneficial for our sector, right? So the system in itself, property-based system, you know where all the convenience stores are, right?
Exactly, and that's the benefit of the business rates tax. You know where stores are, so of course you want to base it around that. But the test is really for now, is are the costs lower for retailers when they're looking at their store? Does it make a meaningful impact on the bill that hits their doorstep? Because it's paying that bill or investing in something else. And at the minute, what we're seeing is promises about reform of the business rate system that actually end up costing retailers more and don't make a difference. And if you don't make that difference to them, they can't invest in their stores, they can't invest in their staff, or indeed all of the communities that they serve. So I think the challenge is really, you know, the difference on the bill. Can you reduce the cost for retailers as part of those reforms?
Yep. Yeah, absolutely right. And again, once we get more detail on that, we will be looking to engage with new ministers on that as well. The third and final thing on the Welsh manifestos that I want to pull out is a reasonably vague promise on the public promise of a new public health strategy. And you know, we've seen some of these changes in recent weeks. We've seen Wales align for the most part with England's HFSS regulations. What is the scope to go further, and what do you anticipate could be in a new Welsh public health strategy?
I think it's difficult to say. I think, you know, the Welsh government have often tried to lead the way on certain public health matters. They've often tried to go in a slightly different direction on things like HFSS. So, I think I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, I think high fat salt sugar is one area where they'll probably revisit and look again, because we're having a big conversation around the definition of what a high fat salt sugar product is at the moment. I think as well, the Welsh government have lots of powers around planning, and they might look again at planning policy, at where the UK government has looked at their national planning policy framework about fast food restaurants and where they can be placed in stores as well. But of course, I think the other big area will be around tobacco and around vape with the new bill in. They're going to be looking at measures around licensing, around displays and advertising restrictions that they can obviously look at and take a slightly different view on some issues in Wales in that space. So I expect more conversations on that.
Yeah, that's a really good point. That leads us on to talking about Scotland, actually. And Scotland is a place where we've had display ban being slightly different to where it is in England. And one of the key manifesto commitments in the SNP manifesto that really stood out to us was something around a vape display ban, which would essentially treat vapes in the same way as tobacco products. Now, Ed, just leave all the other parts of this aside. Purely from a practicality standpoint in stores and the way that stores are structured, how much of an issue could this be for retailers?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a big practical issue in terms of space. This all always comes back to space with convenience, doesn't it? How much space do you actually have to put the product? And when you then take it down from the store to just the area behind the store and just the gantry behind the counter, then of course there's going to be a problem if you're treating vapes as the same as tobaccos, where they have to be behind the doors and only displayed when requested. And that's simply because if you think about vapes in convenience stores or any stores, there's quite a wide range of different types, different sizes, different flavors. So if they're going behind a display, then of course that's going to mean consolidation in range. And when you make those changes, it also probably means around cost. Yes. Costs for retailers. You know, refitting stores in small spaces inevitably means that you're going to fall into some kind of issues around where do I put this? Or you can't, I mean, you move one thing and then you end up moving the checkout and you end up moving a whole other bunch of stock. So I think,
well, and we know that that area in the space at the back of the store is prime real estate that is under a lot of pressure from manual operations of deposit return schemes, from parcel collections, from additional services. So it's, you know, it's not like retailers have just awash with space behind the till to just stick stuff more in, right?
Exactly right. I mean, there's so much space, there's so much going on in that space already, then to add more pressure is a real challenge. I think there's a bigger picture. Obviously, we start from those practical points, but also from the point of the policy. You know, if we want people to have access to vape products in some way because they're a smoking cessation device, then of course you still have to be able to see them, look at them, access them in some way. So it's a real challenge, I think, for the Scottish Government to get this right in terms of impact on retailers and balance of the policy going forward as well. So what's written in the manifesto document still has to be thrashed out in terms of real practicalities.
Yeah, but it certainly gives us an indication of the direction that they're looking to go in, and sure, you know, something that we can raise those challenges on. Another thing that I think is, hopefully a direction of travel, not necessarily a specific policy, because it does seem very difficult to implement, is this idea of price ceilings on a basket of between 20 and 50 essential food items, but only for large supermarkets. So lots of qualifications in this, lots of challenges. Jordan, is this even possible? And is there any chance of this ever happening?
Yeah, I mean, we'll have to wait for more information on what this will actually look like. I mean, they say large supermarkets, but it's not very clear exactly how do you define a large supermarket. Is this based on the size of a premise or is it based on the size of a business? And I think there's important things that we'd want to kind of get out there, and that's that prices are set based on where retailers can set prices, because operating costs are quite high, food inflation is quite high. You know, these are quite low margin businesses, and they often want to set prices based on how they can. So I think we'd want to try and highlight the difficulty and really why retailers set price the way they do.
Yeah, and for that basket of essential food items, is it all of them together as it can be, not, you know, is it each of them as a part of that? There are so many possible complications, possible problems. We know that, you know, in the convenience sector, lots of these things are on offer. There's Nectar prices and club card prices and all these kinds of things that play into that. So I don't know, for me, it feels more pipe dream than it is policy at the moment, but I guess we'll have to wait and see.
I think it shows that all governments across the UK are conscious of this food inflation challenge that we're going to have through the rest of 2026, and they want to be looking at this, and they'll be looking at retailers and scrutinising what they're doing around pricing. I think it's a real challenge to regulate on from a competition perspective. And I think it's going to be more about how they can work with industry to make sure that we're offering the best value for people. And ultimately, the best way to do that is to create the right environment for us to invest and to do our work to deliver for customers as well. So hopefully, this policy starts a better conversation about that instead of complicated regulation in this space.
Yes, yeah. And I think you will notice a running theme through all of this, which is the majority of good policy is just leave us alone, just let us get on with it and allow us the conditions to be able to invest. The final thing that I'd like to pick out, actually, and it is probably interesting that it has taken us to the end of this to get to this, because it's obviously a massive priority for ACS, is about retail crime. And you know, one of the things in the manifesto that we think is positive is £10 million over the next 3 years committed to the Retail Crime Task Force. on the face of it, this seems positive, but we know we're at a critical moment when it comes to tackling retail crime, particularly cracking down on the illicit trade. What do you want to see from this commitment, and what should retailers expect to see from this commitment over the next few years?
Well, it's good news. It's good news that we're investing and focusing on the fact that it's written in the manifesto just shows how far we have come in sort of the profile and the importance of the issue of shop theft and retail crime and how visible it is to consumers. So, you know, that is positive. The other thing is that this task force is already established, and this money is actually about putting uniformed officers on the ground in city centres where they're having real challenges. The question is how far will that money go in terms of actually making a real difference on the scale of the challenge we are seeing? And it is still big, and a big one out there for retailers in terms of the level of theft. But, you know, the fact that we're investing in officers on the ground is great. I think that the most efficient way to use this is making it easier for retailers to report crime and for the police to be able to analyse that data. Because if we come back to what we see from retailers most when we talk to them through our research projects is actually... they're prolific offenders. The retailers know who they are. The police know who they are, but they really struggle to join the dots between different things. So yes, we want more officers on the ground, but also we probably need more around that system to report and make it more efficient in the long term. That would be a good long-term investment, I think.
Yeah, they're very much, you know, not seeing that £10 million just sort of disappear and filter out, but actually seeing that, you know, boots on the ground, right? That's what makes the difference. So speaking of boots on the ground, Jordan, there'll be plenty of new faces to engage with as I horrendously mix my metaphors as we go through here. New faces to engage with over the next coming weeks and months, both in Wales and Scotland. Obviously, big job for you, us, all of us as a team to get members' voices heard. What's the plan over the coming weeks and months on this?
Sure. So firstly, we'll be writing to the new cabinet secretaries on some of the key issues that we set out earlier in this podcast. So I really think it's really important to really set out exactly where our position is and try and give as much information and work with the government as they look to develop these policies. Secondly, a lot of new members of the Senedd and members of the Scottish Parliament as well. So we'll be looking to engage with them, writing to them, sharing key information, try and keep local data available for them as well. And importantly, we'll be wanting to encourage retailers to invite their local representatives in their store where they can as well. So we'll be supporting members with that too. And we'll be in Cardiff in a couple months as well at a reception hosting members of the Senedd.
Yeah, no, that's great. And I can't stress enough the importance of getting these people, some of which you'd be kind of new into politics, new into business to an extent, may not know about the operations of convenience store retailing, getting them into your business to say, look, this is how it works in practice. These are the challenges we're facing. This is what we need is incredibly effective. And obviously we will be supporting members to get their MSs and MSPs into store in the coming weeks and months. That's pretty much all we've got time for today. Thank you, Ed and Jordan, for joining me. The final thing to mention is a reminder about our next event, Activation Live, coming to the Midland Hotel in Manchester on June the 16th. Please circle this date in your diary. This is a fantastic opportunity to get a first look at the brand plans from major suppliers into the convenience sector for the second half of 2026, looking into big events like Halloween and Christmas, you know, major milestones for the sector, and get ahead of your competition. Tickets are free for ACS members, so go to acs.org.uk and secure your place there. Spaces are limited, so do that as soon as possible, and we will see you in June.